Sentire Media.
Hello, you. You're listening to A History of Italy. Episode 169, The Italian War 6, Round 1 Aftermath, The North. E così ritorno su, lascio i colli nelle valli, tra due salici piangenti, io ritrovo la speranza di un amore che ormai fu. Allow me to begin with a quick service announcement. If you are a Patreon supporter, you can use the special Patreon feed on the same podcast player that you use for the regular one. Don't hesitate to get in touch to learn how. And if you want access to ad-free episodes, including host-read ones, now is a great time to become a Patreon supporter. Sadly, this is the last of our series of episodes in collaboration with Explore Worldwide. We thank them very much for supporting these episodes and hope to see them back again in future. It's all about local knowledge, and that is what sets Explore apart. Their respect for the local culture and environment extends to finding local tour leaders that can get you off the beaten track and into the heart of your adventure. And their small groups allow for a more personalized experience you will never forget. Whether it's visiting a Roman villa on the classical tour in Sicily or a food and wine tasting tour in the hilltop towns of Tuscany, Explore take care of everything, putting the quality of their local tour leaders front and centre, so you'll truly understand the wow factor of where you are. May and June are the best times to visit Italy, so why not start by heading to exploreworldwide.com, that's exploreworldwide.com, or better, follow the link in the show notes to their website. Whatever you decide to do this summer, don't just travel, explore. In the last episode, we started taking stock of what the situation was in the Italian peninsula following the Italian adventure of French King Charles VIII. We toured Sardinia, Sicily, the Kingdom of Naples, and then the Papal States, where Cesare Borgia was setting the scene for his own adventure. Now we're going to continue our trip, and heading north from the Papal States, once we get through the Republic of Siena, is the Republic of Florence. We have already taken a detour during Charles's descent to see the rise and fall of the charismatic Dominican friar Girolamo Savonarola and his Order of Florence. Now, we're going to fill in the blanks a bit and bring them up to date and ready for the second round of Italian wars. One aspect we cannot underestimate is the importance of Pisa for landlocked Florence that needed to get its goods out to a port. Thanks to Piero de' Medici the Inconsequential, Florence had lost not only Pisa, but the other port city of Livorno. I only recently discovered that Livorno in English, or at least in the past I imagine, was known as Leghorn. That obviously makes me think of Foghorn Leghorn, the rooster from Looney Tunes. Anyway, Livorno flipped back pretty quickly to Florence, but it very quickly got dragged into the whole big mess with Pisa, which is also actually known as the Pisan War, which got many of the Italian powers on Pisa's side against that big bully Florence. As is often the case, the Italian powers tried to get someone else to do the dirty work, and once again it was Ludovico il Moro, Duke of Milan, to call a foreign power in to intervene. Pisa was traditionally considered to be an imperial city, so Holy Roman Emperor Maximilian was called in to put his money where his mouth was, since he had quite readily joined the League of Venice in 1495. Down he came with a rather puny little army, aided by Venetian galleys and Genoese ships. The siege of Livorno began. Then a storm came, scattered the fleet, and soon after the siege was lifted, and Maximilian headed home empty-handed, and possibly quite a bit embarrassed. Aside from pining for Pisa and having to defend Livorno, things in Florence after the friar got fried, Girolamo Savonarola, that is, things were more or less calm. Pier Soderini, the guy who had answered King Charles VIII's threat of sounding his horns with the threat of ringing the bells, meaning that Florence would resist, was elected gonfaloniere for life. Perhaps more interesting for us, the Council of Florence also chose a secretary, a certain Niccolò Machiavelli, who not long down the line would be sent by Florence to keep an eye on Cesare Borgia, who would give the Florentine one of his most important case studies for The Prince, a kind of DIY manual on how to set up a new duchy and hold on to it. There was another famous Florentine around this time who went on a little trip. To introduce said Florentine, I need to go back to when I was in fourth grade at Kreiser Elementary School in Pulaski County, Virginia. Yes, I was a Kreiser critter and proud of it. No, wait, first we need to go back to the film My Big Fat Greek Wedding. Have you seen it? It's the one with the Greek father who reckoned that absolutely anything that humanity has done can be in some way traced back to Greece. Well, my dad was like that for Italy. Anything worth doing that humanity had done was either done by an Italian or an Italian had a hand in it. So back to fourth grade. My parents organized a foreign country day for my schoolmates. My mum did a presentation on the UK. A Japanese colleague of my dad's did a presentation on Japan. My dad also managed to invite our local pizza guy, Ciro, from Ciro's Pizza, to come and talk about Egypt, because Ciro was actually Egyptian. He had, however, lived in Italy and spoke Italian, so close enough for good pizza. Then, of course, my dad spoke about Italy. Before we get any further, he was asked if we have Coke in Italy. We do. It's not that easy, however, to find Dr. Pepper and Mr. Pibb and Mountain Dew and all that other stuff, but we do have Coke, as well as the Italian answer to Coke, Chinotto. Anyway, I digress from my digression. So my father asked the students who had discovered their country, and of course the chorus answered Christopher Columbus, an Italian, Genoese to be precise. But then he asked them what the name of their country was, and the answer was America. And when he pressed on and asked where the name came from, they didn't know. Of course, it was an Italian, Amerigo Vespucci. Vespucci means little wasps, and that is the family emblem, a bunch of wasps. Amerigo was the third of four children. In 1491, he went off to Seville to work for the Medici Bank. It was there that he met Cristoforo Colombo. That was just one of the events that transformed a banker into a navigator and renowned cartographer. It was he that first mapped out a lot of the coast of the Americas. He also named a lot of things. Mostly he would give the name based on the saint day on the date of discovery or of the month, such as when he discovered Rio de Janeiro in January. At times he would stray from the usual policy, and when he saw a land that must have really reminded him of Venice, he called it Little Venice, Venezuela. In any case, as we know, it was the Florentine Amerigo Vespucci that demonstrated that Columbus had not actually found a way to get to Asia, but what was for the Europeans a whole new world that was given his name, America. Speaking of traveling, we now head out of Tuscany, and that takes us to the Republic of Genoa, which, as we have said, had lost its independence and alternated between French and Milanese domination. Further north would take us to the lands of the Savoy, but we've not got much to say about them at the moment, so it's back east to Milan. We spoke a lot about Milan during the whole descent of Charles VIII, and so we'll simply add that Ludovico il Moro, between 1497 and 1498, was hit with two items of bad news. First of all, his wife, the Duchess of Milan, Beatrice d'Este, who had stepped up in his stead to manage the duchy and fight off the threat of Louis, Duke of Orléans, died in 1497. Ludovico was devastated. The funeral lasted a week, a huge, sumptuous affair. He would never forget his wife and made sure he visited her tomb every week. Speaking of Louis d'Orléans, that was the other piece of bad news. for we know that it was he that succeeded his cousin Charles VIII, becoming Louis XII, with a claim not only to the Kingdom of Naples, but also the Duchy of Milan, and he had made it very clear to all that he intended to make good on that claim. Indeed, soon enough, the new French king had made an agreement with the Pope and Venice and was ready to head down. Il Moro's days as Duke of Milan were numbered. Moving from Milan towards Venice, we could also pass by Mantua of the Gonzaga, but they're getting their own episode next, so we'll leave them there for now. Venice stayed in the background for most of the time during the first phase of the Italian Wars, then entering with the League of Venice, or Holy League, and harrying the French out of southern Italy on the Adriatic, the east or right side of the boot. We have also just seen that they got involved in the defense of Pisa against Florence, but they also backed out of that pretty quickly by reaching an agreement with Florence in 1498. After all, Florence was always a convenient ally against the closer Duchy of Milan. To counter this, Il Moro continued with his seemingly endless habit of calling foreign powers in and got the Turks to invade the northeast Friuli area. This resulted in the 1499 Battle of Zonchio, also known and more easy to pronounce as the First Battle of Lepanto. It was a defeat for the Venetians, in part due to the dithering of the commander, Antonio Grimani, although he didn't have very clear orders. Indeed, when he stood trial, he was not executed, but exiled, and would later actually become Doge. The Doge at the time of the battle we mentioned instead was Agostino Barbarigo. This round of the Venetian-Turkish Wars ended in 1503, after yet another battle won by the Turks. Although 1499 was not good at sea, the Venetians managed to extend their terraferma empire, the part on dry land, into the Italian peninsula by taking Cremona. They also managed to avoid in this period a rather nasty famine, using their vast trade network to get hold of food supplies. All in all, Venice closed off the 15th century with a more positive than negative balance, and it was still not only one of the major Italian powers, but also European ones. There were, however, cracks in the image of grandeur. Although spending on lavish building and a show of wealth continued at the end of the century, 1495 to 1500 saw a lot of businesses go under. Trade suffered greatly, not only from the dangers of the encroaching Turks, but also from Portuguese competition, especially with the circumnavigation of Africa in 1488, although it seems that the Phoenicians had done it around 2,000 years earlier. There was also a lot of internal conflict, with the old nobles unhappy with the new upstarts coming in, the party of the Free Republic struggling against those who would impose tighter central control, and as always, the young versus the old generations. This, as was always the case, was also reflected in family divides, with the Steno, Mocenigo, and Loredan versus the Falier, Barbarigo, and Grimani families. That's if you're taking notes for an upcoming exam on 15th century Italy. Otherwise, just forget those names. So, that completes our lightning overview of the Italian peninsula around the year 1499. Next time, we're visiting with the beautiful lake city of Mantua. But after that, King Louis XII, you're up to bat. Thank you very much for listening. A History of Italy is a Sentire Media production created and hosted by me, Mike Corradi, and produced by my wonderful Patreon supporters, who I'd like to thank, starting from the second half of the Galileo Galilei and Margherita Hack level, and that is Jacob L, Jeff M, Jeffrey W, John W, Jordan C, Joshua G, Julia G, Justin E, Kyle D, Lauren H, Old John in Milwaukee, Go Brewers, Orlando D, Kevin, Linus, Mark, Marianne, Marxist-Leninist Sicilian, Mella, and Mitrus Porcius, and of course, we cannot ever forget the tippy-top Maria Montessori and Dante Alighieri level, Lisa K, Andrew M, Peter W, David L, David C, JW, Sen, David A, Karen D, Peter F, Helenka, Kaiser Bosch, Bridget, Dallas, and Joseph. Thank you, one and all. If, like them, as I said at the beginning, you'd like to have access to ad-free episodes and extra content, we have a news cappuccino dropping soon. Please go to historyofitaly.com, click through to the support page, and click on the Patreon button. Thank you very much if you decide to do so. Remember, you're more than welcome to get in touch with comments, criticisms, please be kind, and so on, by sending an email to hello@ahistoryofitaly.com or looking us up on our social media. Once again, thank you very much for listening, and until next time, arrivederci.